Hello, everyone. Dr. Mackenzie Brooks here. Welcome to Women's Work of Quickening. This is what women do. All over our planet, incredible women are engaged in all kinds of life essential, life respecting, life supporting, and life enhancing actions. We at drmackenziebrooks.com are collecting their stories, compiling them in one location for women to access, to listen, and perhaps to be inspired by the inner and outer journeys that these women of voice and action are walking. Every story shared by these women of voice and action offer the rest of us an opportunity to learn and benefit from the life learnings and wisdoms that these women have gained on their heroic journeys and now are willing to share with us. My deepest desire is that you enjoy listening to this inspiring woman as much as I have enjoyed engaging in this interview conversation with her. Today is October 9th, 2015, and I am pleased to introduce Jessica Ernst. Jessica Ernst is a 58-year-old Canadian scientist with over 25 years' experience working in the petroleum industry and lives rurally near Rosebud, Alberta. Jessica is suing Encana for illegally fracturing and contaminating her community's freshwater aquifers, and the Alberta government and energy regulator for failing to follow the investigation and enforcement processes that they had established and publicized. She filed her lawsuit in 2007 and has a 2016 hearing before the Supreme Court of Canada to appeal her case against the energy regulator after Alberta courts granted them legal immunity for violating her constitutional rights and falsely labeling her a terrorist. If she wins at the Supreme Court, she will be sent back to the same Alberta courts to try again, 9 years into her lawsuit. Jessica's case against Encana and the Alberta government proceed regardless. Jessica Ernst was awarded the Unanima International Woman of Courage Award in 2011. Unanima International offers this award to a woman who embodies those qualities which they believe is essential for the advancement of women everywhere. Solidarity, a passion for human rights, commitment, and courage in the face of power which threatens life. Jessica dedicates this October 9, 2015 interview to Mr. George Bender, Australia farmer, and his loved ones. For more information about Jessica and her lawsuit, please visit her website at www.ErnstVersusEncana.ca. I'll spell that Ernstversus V like Victor, S like Sam, Encana, Encana.ca. ErnstVersusEncana.ca. To purchase Andrew Nikeforek's book, Slick Water, published by Greystone Books, which chronicles Jessica Ernst's story, please visit Amazon.ca and also your local bookstore and library. Welcome, Jessica.
Hello. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Jessica, for those of us who don't know, could you please start by telling us how you found yourself doing what it is that you are doing?
Well, that's rather complicated. I think how it all started was with noise. And Canna had started an experimental fracking program in my community of Rosebud, Alberta, and all around us, but had kept it secret, so none of us knew what was going on. But what we began noticing was more and more incredibly invasive industrial noise. And we began asking the company to consult with us. They only did under duress. In fact, they were so badly trying to cover up what they were doing that I caught Encana lying to me and my community, so I resigned. I had I'd done a lot of work over the years for Encana and their predecessor, Pan-Canadian. And as the noise progressed and the lies progressed, we began asking, are you fracking? What about our water? Oh, Encana promised we'll only frack far below your drinking water to prevent gas from migrating in. So don't worry, go home and be good little Albertans and stay quiet. Well, I began uncovering an incredible cover-up of abuse, corruption, regulators abusing citizens here to try to help cover up in Canada's law violations. And the more data I looked at and obtained by various means, either on the internet from regulator and industry research papers, but also by freedom of information requests, I realized something dreadful was happening everywhere that companies are fracking, including here in Alberta. And when I found the evidence of Encana breaking the law, I knew I had to file a lawsuit. I also have documented evidence of the regulator violating the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, my rights of freedom to expression, where they were trying to intimidate me into silence so that they could continue protecting Encana. And I have incredible documented evidence of the water regulator doing a terribly shoddy, corrupt, incredibly dirty, for example, dropping gopher shit contaminated sampling equipment into one water well here, and doing that to cover up again for Encana. And then I found myself being asked by countries elsewhere in the world to come and tell them the truth, and my life essentially fracked right out of control.
What impact has taking action had on your life?
Well, incredible loss of loved ones, loss of my time, loss of my sense of peace and security, loss of my legal right to quiet enjoyment of my home. I don't feel comfortable going anywhere because, not that I'm afraid for my life, because I believe if the defendants kill me, they'll look so bloody guilty they don't dare at this point. But that doesn't remove the reality of the harms that could be done to me to disrupt and ruin my truck or waste my time and cost me money. So I stay home not only to protect myself in the lawsuit, but to remove any ability for people to waylay me. I've had incredible betrayals by people I trusted, friends, loved ones, that horrify me to this day. Environmental groups have used me and my research, claiming it for their own, to get donations for themselves, to keep their big salaries coming in. I have no income doing what I'm doing. I haven't been paid for any of this. I don't expect to be paid for any of this, but having my work used by others for them to keep salaries rolling in when they claim to be environmental groups or social justice groups, that's absolutely unacceptable to me. I have lost my trust. Most persons of authority now, I have zero trust for them in Canada. Mr. Harper has destroyed science in this country, in our public agencies that are mandated to protect our environment and produce good science. The regulators have deregulated, so I have zero faith in them. I used to believe that we had a regulator in Alberta, and it was at one time what they claim now to be the best in the world. They used to be. They are no longer. They've been so corrupted and have become really a filthy entity that's run by an ex-Encana VP, Mr. Gerard Prati. And the politicians, I don't have any faith in any of the politicians, they seem to have no integrity, no ethics, no backbone, no courage, and are really weak puppets doing what the corporations are ordering them to do. We used to have, decades ago, centuries ago, we used to have decent people running in politics to do the will of the people as they were elected by the people and to protect the power of the people and the health and communities, or health of communities and people. That's gone. That's gone all around the world. One of the biggest losses I see in what I'm doing is in studying the impacts of unconventional oil and gas and hydraulic fracturing, I've seen the most incredible increase in corruption in everything that I never saw when I was working in the conventional industry.
I have read the recently released book, Slick Water. Would you be willing to talk about this book?
Oh, yeah, sure. Andrew Nikiforuk is the author who's been reporting on my case since 2004. He became intrigued with my work and me when he heard, or someone had forwarded him, my resignation to Encana. And so he started reporting on my case 11 years ago.
He worked closely with you to write this book.
Yes, absolutely, because it's a compelling read. I don't know how Andrew is able to write such a complicated scientific and legal sort of a thriller, is kind of the way some people are telling me they read the book. He's taken extremely complicated materials and made it very easy for anyone to read, even people with no science background and no legal background. And yet, every easy-to-read sentence on my part in the story requires documented evidence. So if, let's say, a small paragraph in the book might take 6 weeks of Andrew and I talking back and forth about what happened and then me sending him all the documented evidence to back up what I told him. And then each piece of evidence would lead to Andrew asking for another piece of evidence, and then he would get a contradictory statement by the regulators or in the press, and he'd then ask me again, and then I would send him the documented evidence to prove that the defendants were lying to the press. So it took Andrew a good 10 years of research that he compiled for the book, and then very close working together, sometimes, oh gosh, 8-9 interviews a day, if not more, over the phone mostly and over email, with sending the documentation back and forth. And some parts of my case are so absolutely unbelievable. For example, the water regulator mandated not only to protect water, but Albertans from harm from contaminated water, intentionally trying to contaminate a citizen's water well with gopher shit, to introduce E. coli into the water, to then use that to blame everyone, even those of us such as me that did not have E. coli in our water, as tested by the regulator. But to discredit everyone and say, oh, well, you guys are dirty, you didn't take care of your water wells. Well, when we went through that chapter in the book, Andrew couldn't believe that such an unbelievably terrible, evil thing had been done to try to cover up what Encana did here. Encana broke the law. And then the regulator broke the law. And then the other regulator violated my charter rights, trying to intimidate me into silence. And of course, all of these things are documented. I'm a scientist. I methodically find and then file and keep and back up and triple back up the evidence I have, because I know Encana and the defendants will never cooperate or heed the court rules and properly hand over the evidence I need to proceed with my case. So I've got it. I've collected it myself. But Andrew masterfully took all that evidence, put it into a story. And what I found most fascinating as a scientist were the parts of the story that he included in the book and the parts that he didn't. Because there are, I mean, the book's only a small part of the story. You could, if you told the entire story, I don't think a reader could ever get through it because so many terrible things were done. So Andrew was quite careful choosing which parts of the case would flow in a story and not overwhelm the reader with too much complicated oil and gas extraction technology or some of the legal writing. Even I find it impossible to understand most of the legal documents on my own lawsuit. And so some aspects aren't described in the book because it would have been much too difficult.
As a woman, Jessica, what have you learned doing what you're doing up until now?
Well, and I mean no disrespect to you or any women listening or any of the women in your sessions. Others have highly recommended you to me because when you first contacted me, I asked questions about you, and some women that attended some of your sessions have nothing but praise for you. However, I don't know how to explain this. I grow increasingly upset with and annoyed by sexism and also the smears of me mislabeling me by the defendants, by the environmental groups who want to make money on my case, and my community members, especially the media. The media have been extremely terrible at this, but I think they're being fed this information by politicians and the regulators and Encana and other companies. I don't see myself as a woman in this. I see myself as a Canadian. I see myself as an Albertan. I see myself as a landowner. I'm a human being that bathed for 2 years because I have some serious injuries to my body when I was a child that are excruciatingly painful. The only thing that would ease the pain was bathing in a hot bath twice a day for about an hour. And I did that after Encana had fracked our aquifers but didn't tell any of us. I don't know what I bathed in. So as a human being whose skin has been impacted by undisclosed toxic chemicals and incredibly dangerous levels of methane that might have been causing caustic burns to my skin, to me, I see me as a body, a human, a person. I don't see me as a woman being harmed in that water. I'm the same as the six-year-olds in this community that screamed after bathing because of the pain that they experienced in the water. I don't see that child as a boy or a girl. And I'm not an activist. I'm not an environmentalist. I'm a scientist. And yet the headlines scream, activist, fighting fracking. I'm not. I'm a citizen who's doing a lawsuit trying to get justice. And I want to get into court and bring everything to the public of the terrible things that are being done and covered up. I'm not doing my lawsuit as a woman. I'm doing my lawsuit as a citizen. It's my duty as a corporation, too. I have a business. It doesn't get any work anymore because of my lawsuit. But my business is officially incorporated. I had an extremely successful business. I'm a business person. I don't see myself as a woman no longer having an income. I see myself as a CEO of my own corporation that now for about 4 years has had no income. And I see myself as a person watching everything I have saved and worked for my entire life. I started saving when I was 8 years old. I see that all vanishing fast to pay the extraordinarily expensive costs to be in Canada's terrible legal system. Incredible costs to pay my lawyers, and they're very kindly and generously giving me a cut rate, but the costs are still incredibly expensive. Then there's the court costs. I had to pay the regulator's lawyer $22,000 because I lost at the two lower courts in Alberta trying to fight for justice about the regulator violating my charter rights. They hate the charter in Alberta. I don't see myself as a woman who's had her charter rights violated. I see myself as a Canadian whose charter rights have been violated. So I don't know how to answer that question. To me, it kind of demeans who I am. And I don't mean to disrespect you or any woman listening to this interview. That's not what I'm trying to say. I think as women, we cause a gross disservice by limiting our experiences because we're women. This case has actually taught me to see myself as a citizen.
Within this context of women as citizens, Jessica, what are the strengths and wisdom that you see are unique to women?
I can see very clearly in this case the different assets that men and women have and the different failures that men and women have, and which is one of the reasons why I believe we have both on this planet, to come to some kind of understanding of each other's weaknesses and strengths as men and women. Let's see. Really, my answer previously is what I've learned. I used to consider myself a woman in day-to-day affairs, in my business. I would notice how I was treated in the industry that has very few women in positions of authority, such as myself, or providing consultation services and advice to vice presidents and CEOs of big oil and gas companies. But in watching what's been happening in the world, where more and more men and women are standing up and saying no, including parents, grandparents, carpenters, teachers, council members, politicians, tradespersons, chocolate makers, artists, organic farmers, musicians. It's really fantastic watching the men and women around the world standing up and saying, absolutely no way, we are not letting this happen to our community. We are keeping fracking out. But what I saw in the beginning when this started, when I began trying to warn people about how bad fracking is and the lies, initially people didn't want to listen to me. And as a woman, I ran after them because I was so worried for their children. I think that's something women do instinctively. I don't have children, so I don't really know, but I think it's a nurturing part of us that's very strong. The sense of community in women is very strong. And as a member of the Rosebud community, I tried to warn people, but people didn't want to know because the men in the community mostly took the bait that Encana dumped on them, which was a bribe of $150,000 if they all kept quiet. And the men pushed for more money, and then the women followed along. Now, that was the sort of experience here. Then a few years later, some of the women came to me here and said, gosh, we've been awful nasty to you, and we didn't listen, and now we're getting skin rashes. The potatoes turn to mush when we cook them. Our rice cookers blow up if we cook rice using rosebud water. If we used bottled water from the city, they don't blow up. What's going on? The women began asking those questions first, and then the men started to ask the questions. You know, I've got this itchy rash. What do you think it's from? Do you think it's from the water? I'm getting lots of headaches. Do you think that's from the water? But for the most part, the biggest difference I saw and what I see is an incredible, gentle, loving gift that women have to give the world and their communities and families. is that they have courage. They have a courage that men don't. Now, I know men are starting to speak out and ask questions all around the world, but it was the women who did so first. It was the women like Lisa Bracken and Laura Amos in the States. They suffered terrible contaminations, Lisa Bracken, from Encana fracks and contaminated drinking water and creek water with benzene and methane. And Lisa Bracken watched her dad die of cancer. And Laura Amos had an adrenal gland tumor she had to get removed. So they were the women with myself. The women were speaking out first. And the women have an incredible strength to go on and on and on. Whereas the men, more often, will push towards, oh, this is costing too much money to do this lawsuit or to speak out. Let's gag and settle. Let's get this case over and done with so we can go back to normal. Whereas the mothers and the grandmothers will keep going stronger and longer. I'm not an expert in any of these things, and I don't want to upset the many courageous men that are speaking out, especially not the men that have spoken out with contamination in their water that then died of cancer. That's been happening in the States.
Jessica, what do you invite other women to know that either you've learned and or you have discovered?
Oh boy, that's a powerful question. I'll try to do it justice. I've learned so much. I think we'd need a camping trip for a week to cover that one. I've made a lot of dreadful mistakes, very painful mistakes. And I think the biggest things I've learned is that we must, as women especially, because I believe we are not the weaker sex, we are the stronger sex. That's a given. That's one of the biggest things I've learned. And what I think women need to do, and what I learned, my biggest mistake was not having enough compassion for the people who don't know better, the people who push for fracking because they think it will bring them richness and jobs, which is not true. It's being proven all around the world that, in fact, the subsidies are why industry's pushing for the fracking, so they can just suck billions out of our taxpayer purses everywhere. But those people don't know better. The lies are incredible. And if we gently, with compassion, listen to everyone, and especially in our communities, and try to remain united, even with those people and the men who want the money that we don't agree with, that we remain united, because that's the strength that no corporation can break. No corrupt regulator, no corrupt politician can break a united, strong, compassionate community that is healthy, says no to the money, and says no to the bribes that then lead to division. I didn't see how important that compassion was. And I got very angry at the men that are pushing for the poisonous activities harming their very own children and communities. I didn't see they're pushing those things because they have the instinct to provide for their families. We have to do an awful lot of changing in our society to bring balance back and to teach men and women that we can bring in other ways of producing energy that will not poison people to death, that will not destroy aquifers or blow up community water towers as happened here in Rosebud, Alberta, after Encana illegally fractured our drinking water aquifers. And I've racked my brains for all these 11 years trying to understand how to get people to listen and pay attention and drop their greed and their apathy. And I think so far, the only lesson or the only tool I've learned is our compassion. We must be compassionate as we try to defend our families and our communities from this incredible abusive assault.
What else do you invite other women to know from what you've learned and discovered?
Never give up. Absolutely never give up. And especially never give up when the men tell us to. In the beginning, I was stunned by the men. The men in the community came to me and told me, oh, you can't talk to the press. That's our job. Oh, you can't do this. That's our job. I hate to think what the men think of me doing this big lawsuit all by myself as a measly, no good, weaker sex woman. I really believe that men try to make women give up because they are afraid of their own power. And when they see women not giving up, like Alexandra in BC, you have such an incredible woman. You have so many incredible women in BC standing firm, and they keep going and going with such grace and integrity and strength and everlasting power. I think that terrifies men because they don't want to get to know their own power, because if they do, then they might have to do something scary with it, like stand up and say no to being abused. So I say the biggest, most important thing that I've learned that I would like to say to all women all around the world, but also men, never give up. And to women specifically, don't ever let a man tell you to give up, or that you're not worth it, or that you're just a woman, or that what you say doesn't matter because you're a woman. But I also warn that women ought to never give up when women tell them to give up, because I've also had women abuse me terribly, matriarchs in the community, trying to silence me for their own personal gain and use me for their own personal gain. Women need to be firm to their own sex as well and say, oh, no, I'm not going to let the matriarch bully me down or control me. We all need to find ourselves, find our power, and then use it. It's fantastic. I never knew, honestly, I never knew at all that I was this powerful. And we all are. We are all equally powerful.
Is there anything else that you've learned in this incredible journey that you're on that you would like to share with other women and invite them to know?
In my experience, and from what I've read, we have a terribly patriarchal, abusive world, and women, for the most part, and children, are the ones most abused. Men are also abused. Boys are sexually abused, just almost as much as girls are. And there's a dreadful amount of abuse done to women, either as women, as adults, or when they were girls. And it is meant to control us. It is meant to take our power away, or to make us never find it in the first place and never find our voice. I think it's most important, the more damaged we are, the more we have been abused, the more we can heal. We cannot heal all of it, but we can learn to live with it and become the most amazing and powerful we can be, no matter what has been done to us. I think a lot of people get so shamed by the abusers. The defendants tried every trick in the book to shame me into giving up, smearing me, mislabeling me, calling me crazy, saying that I'm just fabricating the contamination, that I'm mentally unstable. Some have been very abusive. And many people give up because they believe more in what others say to them or think of them than what they think of themselves or them, like how they see themselves. I think we have to believe in ourselves no matter how bad it has been or how bad it gets.
As you've been speaking, Jessica, I hear you using the word abuse, and in the background that I have, I understand what that means and that there are cycles of abuse, and I'm wondering if you might speak more about what you mean by abuse that you're experiencing as a citizen and as a woman in your efforts to stand up and protect what you're standing up to protect, our water and our future.
And our rights, a big part of my lawsuit is our charter rights, because I believe it is not possible to frack Canadians with our charter rights intact and for the companies to get away with the devastation with legal immunity. So our charter's at risk here. Abuse, well, there are many kinds of abuse. The community abused me, but the regulators abused me. There have been persons in businesses, oil companies, and landowners that have been abusive because they were told by Encana I was going to ruin the entire oil and gas industry single-handedly and steal their prosperity, which is ridiculous. One woman, yeah, right, one woman. How am I going to do that by myself? Impossible. But they were scared, so they were abusive. There's sexual abuse, there's physical abuse, emotional abuse. Bullying is abuse. Covering up contamination, that's abuse. Telling the press that I'm crazy, that's abusive. And this has been nonstop since I started raising my concerns in 2003. The abuse has been nonstop. It chips away at you, and all persons, especially women, because I think abuse does control women more than it controls men, but I haven't quite decided on that yet. That's just my experiences of observation and direct experience so far. Women tend to back down faster to keep the peace and to prevent more abuse, especially to children. So some women who might be speaking out when they see their children getting abused in school will stop, because they don't want their children abused. The abuse is rampant, and the cycle of abuse goes on and on and on until we, the persons being abused, men or women, decide to say no more. Now, the abuse will continue being thrown at us, but then you can make the choice of accepting it or not. You can leave the abusive spouse or parent or community or church. You can take direct action, as I have done with my lawsuit, to hold these abusive this abusive company and the abusive regulators to account. But most of all, when we refuse to see ourselves as a victim in a cycle of abuse, that's when we get set free out of the cycle. That's what I've learned. The people in the community here responded as victims. And the defendants and the community and others kept trying to turn me into a victim. One member of an environmental group in America has worked ruthlessly trying to push me back into the victim box. I don't know why she's doing that, except perhaps because she's uncomfortable with seeing somebody like myself, who ought to behave as a victim, not. And victims can be controlled, and thus the cycle of abuse continues. By me doing my lawsuit, yes, people may see me living without water and no longer even having safe water to flush my toilets with. It's a very difficult way to live, especially in 40 below winter Alberta, to not have water to bathe in more than once every 10 days. That's really hard, and people try to turn you into a victim, victimize you, because your water was victimized, your water was raped, so then they try to rape you. I say no to that. And it's easier being a victim, much easier. People will try to console you, and you can weep and cry and whimper around. that's not going to do anybody any good. That will not protect anyone's children. It will not protect water. It will not protect our charter. It will not protect our dignity. It will not stop the horrific abuses to other races and First Nations in Canada or elsewhere in the world. And it will not stop the horrid bigotry the politicians push, because that's how some of them get elected. Saying no to being a victim breaks the cycle. And a researcher in Pennsylvania, she did a fantastic presentation. It's covered in Andrew's book, Slick Water. And one, she quoted someone saying, in a community that was being terribly abused by fracking and the corrupt regulators, this person was quoted saying, it's like we are losing our love. And that's what happens when we are victimized and then allow ourselves to stay in what I call victim mode. No, get out of that. Stand up, out. You have to almost visualize pulling myself out of a slimy pit of weeping, whimpering victim tar and standing in the wind on top of the coulee here at Rosebud, free and strong and truthful and compassionate and with all my courage resisting all temptation to go back into victim mode. We have no power when we are victims. And then we have to, when we pull ourselves out of victim mode, then we have to teach our children not to go there, and others in our community, and people that are teaching others. And I think the most important, powerful asset we have, especially as women, is our love. That is something that nobody can break. And that is what I believe, my heart, my love, is why I believe the defendants and the courts will never be able to break me.
I'm reading from the amazing book, Slick Water, which, by the way, I highly recommend that everyone reads. On page 300, it reads, in 2004, at a meeting at the Rosebud Church, Jessica Ernst had handed out a one-page sheet on the cycle of violence employed by Encana during the unconventional gas boom. Would you please share with our listeners what you were talking about when you handed out that one-page sheet?
For that meeting, I prepared a little sheet. It was one page long that had little pictures of the cycle of abuse. Everybody knows that cycle now because we speak out about the abuse. We speak out about the abuse to children, to wives, partners, children, spouses, especially the physical and the sexual abuse to children. We talk about that now. But we're not talking about how that same cycle is used by abusive politicians like Mr. Harper or companies like Encana or the regulators as those in Alberta. So what I did was I took the typical image of the cycle of abuse, which was used by that researcher in Pennsylvania, the same image she later used, and I put into the cycle what Encana did to visualize for the people in the community how they were stuck in this cycle of abuse and were being abused by Encana. The regulators, of course, and the politicians and the church are the enablers and have been the enablers here of the abuses by Encana. So, for example, the compressor noise would get louder and louder and louder. The community would erupt with letters to the regulator and outbursts and anger. And so Encana would, too late, Encana would come with a sort of a belittling meeting and pat the community on the head and say, oh, there now, everyone, go back into victim mode, and we're going to give you, well, we won't give it, we're going to promise you the roses and chocolates the abusive husband usually gives to his wife after he's broken her ribs, her arms, and given her two black eyes. Oh, honey, I'll never do it again. Oh, look at these fabulous chocolates I bought for you. Oh, and 12 long-stemmed roses. So Encana promises $150,000 to the one part of the community, but doesn't give the money for 6 years. But that essentially puts the victims back into victim mode, silences their protests about the abuse, and the cycle of abuse continues around the circle until the noise gets really bad again, or the traffic is speeding through the children's playground zone at 80 and 100 kilometers an hour, which is what Encana was recorded doing here, nearly killing a deaf student, or nearly hitting, I should say. If she had been hit, she would have been killed, and hitting vehicles, and the community rising up again in loud outbursts of protest and indignation and anger, with Encana to come and say, oh, they're there now. We see your fire hall's quite small, and you need a good fire hall, because, of course, the water tower had blown up in an explosion. Our water's explosive now, so let's con the community by giving them a bigger fire hall. But that, again, is chocolates and roses to the abused community. And all the while this goes on, around and around and around, the church smiles and says nothing, just like the bishop in Boston covering for the pedophilic priests, which is an analogy Andrew Nikiforek presented at his book launch a few weeks ago here in Rosebud. The regulators smile and help Encana get away with the cycle of abuse by deregulating while publicly saying they are increasing regulations. And the government also, federal and provincial, the governments also enabled this abusive cycle by massive deregulation while lying, which is what Mr. Harper did. He's decimated our laws in the country. So companies can basically dump their frack waste now into our rivers with zero accountability and take as much water as they want, even if they kill fish in those waterways by doing so. And the provincial government in Alberta by taking more and more of our rights away. That's how that image started out. And when I handed it out in the church in that meeting, the uncomfortable silence was so thick, you could slice it and serve it on a platter.
You mentioned earlier that you keep to yourself for a couple of reasons, and one of the reasons was to protect your lawsuit. What do you mean by that?
Well, every time I trusted people, I ended up being betrayed. And the betrayals were done intentionally to harm me, but also the lawsuit. There's something called Synergy Alberta, and it's moved into BC. When I presented in Nova Scotia on the first speaking tour, Synergy Alberta was there before I even got there. So they'd found out where I was going to present, and then Synergy Alberta moved in to start brainwashing the community. And what Synergy Alberta does, it's a terrible thing, controlled by the oil and gas companies, by the Canadian Association of Petroleum Producers, your regulator in BC, the OGC, the Oil and Gas Commission, and our regulator here in Alberta, and the corrupt politicians, and the non-corrupt politicians who are too cowardly to say anything because they don't want to lose their job. Well, Synergy, what it does, it's brilliant, and I've been studying this as a scientist because it's so evil, it's incredibly fascinating, and I stay away from it because the brainwashing is so powerful, it sucks everybody in. And I decided the only way I can remain outside of it is to stay away from it. And when I first began speaking out, Encana and the regulators began chasing me with Synergy nonstop. And when they couldn't brainwash me or trick me with their lies, and they used incredibly sinister traps to try to get me sucked in, then they started to get citizens to ask for my help, befriend me, and then turn around and stabbed the saber in my back for the defendants. And that's what Synergy Alberta does. And they do it all around the world, wherever the companies want to frack. They go into the communities, they find the people who are addicted to ego and money, the people that have huge financial debts and addictions. And they use those people to go do the harm and damage for them so that a course in Canada never gets caught doing such despicable things. And it's quite powerful and insidious. So I learned the safest way to protect myself is to stay away from it. And it's everywhere. And I've been betrayed so many times. I've had so many people with Synergy do things like they'll phone me on the Sunday of a long weekend saying they're right there and they want to come over right now and videotape me. That's incredibly invasive. And most Canadians are unbearably nice. Too nice. So they wouldn't say no. And these Synergy people try to get abused citizens on tape talking about the abuse, but then saying that they're not opposed. And that's how this Synergy works. You try to get the message out there, which is terrible propaganda, to promote what industry needs right now and the regulators across the world, to make citizens love being poisoned by fracking and having their rights violated. I know it sounds absolutely terrible, but I've studied it for a long time, and there have been endless attempts to do this to me nonstop. And it's exhausting to protect yourself from. My lawsuit's a massive amount of work with research and studying the data and dealing with the attacks by the defendants, never mind Synergy and this propaganda and brainwashing. So I decided and learned the safest for me was to stick to my research and lawsuit and study of how terrible gas migration is into groundwater caused by the oil and gas industry. And that requires sticking to myself because the Synergy, well, it's so evil that I don't know who to trust out there anymore. I have a few tiny numbers I can count of citizens I trust around the world, but for the most part, it's hard to say. For the most part, it's very difficult to know for me which citizens are Synergy, and so the safest is for me to stay away.
How can other women help, Jessica?
That's a very tough question because I just had some women offer to help me a few weeks ago and then they caused more damage because they jumped ahead and smeared me and mislabeled me and tried to turn me into an activist. So I had to tell them to stop, which of course offends people, but they don't understand how many people want to see me fail. The environmental groups in Canada mostly are controlled opposition. They make big money stopping people like me. And the community is starting to recognize that they've been lied to and betrayed by the very people they believe are protecting them. So they're starting to become supportive and speak out. But it's still very difficult to know which people truly know how bad the position is that I'm in. So if women want to help, they have to really look deep inside to find out if they really want to help for water's sake and humanity's sake, or if they're trying to help for personal financial gain or to feed their egos. I've had quite a few people women that have wanted to help but have caused immeasurable harm. And so it's gone on for years. So I tend now to rely on myself. Andrew Nikiforuk does cover that fairly well in the book. I think he explains quite well that I've learned if something needs to be done, I do. I've learned the only way it needs to be done is if I do it myself. I've had people try to interfere and upend our legal strategy, all kinds of things. It's really terrible that people are so corrupt that they focus so much on trying to betray someone like me for their personal gain. But that's the truth of it. If people want to help without harming, especially women, I think the best way women can help what I'm doing is for them to believe in themselves and to stand up in their communities like you're doing in yours to defend something they love, to defend air, land, water, rights, their families, their communities, culture, art, history. We have a government, a federal government, that's rewriting our history. There's lots of people lots of women can fight to defend history. We're losing our librarians, we're losing our libraries, we're losing our books, because fascism cannot operate well when you have an educated population. Women can help massively by educating other women and children in their community and educating men in a non-sexist way that we are all alike and that we are all worthy of safe air, water, and land and food and nurturing, whether we're men or women.
What are the next steps for you, Jessica?
Well, keep going. Every day I wake up thinking I can't do another, I can't possibly go through another betrayal. I can't possibly get through another day. And I tell myself the old AA, the Alcoholic Anonymous slogan or statement, just for today. Just for today, I will try to get through today and do the work that constantly piles on my desk and on all my tables throughout my home. I have such a backlog of work to do and other citizens to help. I mean, I'm doing the work of all the regulators and I'm doing it by myself. It's absolutely terrible, the workload I have. And I can't bear to face it someday. So the biggest battle I have with myself is waking up and facing the day again. The days are relentless. It's 7 days a week, 16, 14, 18 hours a day. I have masses of records still to process for the lawsuit and constantly study what the defendants are doing and the tricks and lies they present to the media. I have endless interviews. They take days because each statement, of course, then you have to back up with documented evidence and send them by email. And then more questions come in, and then you need to send more documented evidence. Lots of phone calls, lots of research. Then on top of that, keeping on top of the current affairs with fracking, because now there's just been more peer-reviewed research out of Johns Hopkins about the harm to the fetus from fracking. I haven't even read the paper yet. That just came out. And so I need to read all these research papers that more and more and more of them keep being published about how seriously bad the harms are from fracking and oil and gas in general. I read the papers, try to summarize them in a simple way and post to my website for others to learn from and then use to educate. So those are my next steps. We have, on a more sort of ground level, we have our Supreme Court hearing tentatively set for January 12th, 2016. We're getting letters of intervention from agencies such as the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and your BC Civil Liberties Association just filed notice asking to intervene in my case. I uploaded that to my lawsuit page. It's a fantastic filing. I just love it. And if I can use a few seconds of your airtime here to thank them profusely for their incredible filing, I say so that right now. But of course, all these documents have to be read and uploaded to the website. We filed our factum, so for the most part, my work is kind of done, but the regulator gets to file their response to that in the next few weeks, and the regulator tends to lie a lot in their legal filings. For example, the regulator lied in a 2012 legal filing naming me a terrorist without any evidence, which you must file if you do something like that. Even the judge concluded there was no evidence, absolutely none, of me being a terrorist. And yet he didn't punish the lawyer or the regulator, and they have not been held to account for defaming me in a legal filing. So I'm constantly having to read their smears and lies in the legal filings, because a lot of the statements are dishonest. And then what else? I have to prepare my property for winter. The chores of living don't go away just because I have an 18-hour day ahead of me. I have to do things like get water. I have to go 45 minutes one way to get 185 gallons of water and then drive back 45 minutes and then a half hour to unload it. And that's a chore that I have to do regularly. Ask your listeners, how long can they survive on 185 gallons? And I have to prepare my trees around here for winter and put away the gardening supplies, get the furnace ready, and try to cope with most days dreading my next day.
Is there anything else that you would like to add and or say, Jessica, before we finish our conversation today?
As bad as it has gotten, and as bad as fracking is and the many other corporate abuses out there, and by our elected officials that are meant to protect us and serve us, I see a phenomenal positive thing happening around the world in humanity. And that is this growing understanding of how the corporations use the cycle of abuse, how the enablers keep the spinning going to enable the abuse, and how more and more men and women are pulling out of that cycle and saying no to being victim, finding each other, and knowing which people, like me trusting you with this interview and agreeing to this interview, and us understanding that we have an understanding of each other and we have an understanding of this process. I believe more and more people around the world are recognizing that and finding the people who understand that cycle, so that together, trusting each other, we can build on more trust, more unity, and bust that cycle for good. Thank you for your courage to have me and the other extraordinarily courageous women on your program. It takes an integral, courageous, powerful woman to do what you're doing, and I commend you for that, and I commend the women you interview, and I commend the women who listen. I think sometimes it takes more courage to listen than even to do.
Thank you, Jessica, for sharing your life learnings and your wisdom with us today. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. Goodbye for now.